week in Chicago. Thank you. With the Morton Salt Company.
Yes.
You saw that? So the Morton Salt Company. Come on. So there was this one of their storage facilities, the Morton Grove, the Morton Salt Company. So they say when it rains, it pours, right? So one of their storage facilities is located adjacent to an Acura dealership, and the wall of the salt containing facility collapsed. And you could see the picture that I sent out on the email. You can Google it. A huge chunk of the wall just fell over, and out came I don't know how many tons of salt spilling over onto the Acuras in the parking lot. What's that?
It's probably not good for the cars.
Not good for the cars, although they probably don't have any snow on them this morning.
They said it destroyed 11 cars.
11 cars.
Yeah.
And this is like an enormous amount of salt. It was like a mountain of salt. So, now, right after I saw this news story, I'm thinking, oh, this is a great topic to try to figure out. Is Morton Salt Company chayav to pay? Are they liable to pay for the cars that were damaged in the Acura dealership? Or are they not? In which direction? Whether they should or should not be obligated?
What if they put in more salt than the building could accommodate?
Okay. So we don't know how much, whether they had overstocked the building. Maybe that was the cause.
Did they know?
Is it their fault? Did they know?
Or the contractor.
Was the contractor licensed? Was it done according to the building codes of the city?
Could have been sabotaged.
Okay, I can't imagine that would be the most likely possibility, but it's possible. So this brings us to an entire world that I wanted to discuss this morning, which is the world of Nezikin. The world of damages, which, after you think about it for a few moments, is actually a lot more complex, and it's different in nature than maybe we would have thought initially. In the following way, the Gemara has, in Baba Kama, the Gemara has a statement, Haiman deboy lemehevi chasida, somebody wants to be pious. So the Gemara gives you three avenues for them to pursue. One of them is l'kayim mili dinizikin. They should be scrupulous and punctilious about aspects of damages. So that is a pretty interesting statement, because I would have expected piety to have to do with religious observance. And even if it has to do with nizikin, why is nizikin a measure of piety? Isn't that just basic decency? If I'm careful about paying you the appropriate wage and not damaging your property and making sure that all of the boundaries, the property respect that needs to be observed. So why is that chasidus? I would have said that's yashrus, propriety. But you get the impression, and some of this we're going to discuss, came from this observation. Rabbi Rosenzweig, when he was here a couple of weeks ago, so he gave a chabura to the Chavri HaKolol, because we're learning Baba Kama. So he spoke about different aspects of Nezikin in the beginning of Baba Kama, and he made this observation on that Gemara that the nature of how we observe the laws of Nezikin does not just stem from the basic moral fabric of human beings. It really stems from something unique, and that is the sanctity and the nature of the Jewish tradition, the Jewish community, and the halacha in general. Meaning, yes, there are different systems of law out there, but the Torah system of law is unique to the halachic process, and that's something which actually has a religious overtones. It's not just another set of laws. It's a set of laws that the same way that we observe Shabbos, and we know we sense a measure of sanctity and piety when we really do Shabbos right, when we daven really the right way, we sense something meaningful there. The same way in a legal system for lawyers, for people who are observing the mili de nezikin, that also has a measure of religious overtones to it. So much so, we know that one of the Sheva mitzvahs, there were seven Noahide laws. There were six that were given to Adam Rishon, then Noah got another one. One of them is the mitzvah of Dinim. The Rambam articulates this in Hilchos Malachim. In the ninth parak of Hilchos Malachim, the Rambam tells you the different requirements for Noahides, that they can't kill and they can't steal, and they have to set up dinims, courts. To judge, the Rambam says, to judge the other six mitzvos. So there's a fascinating tshuva on the Ramah that I just saw this morning. I had a chance to peek at it. The Ramah, Rav Moshe Israel, is living in Krakow in the end of the 16th century. He writes that he's wondering, perhaps even the non-Jewish courts, maybe they have to observe dinim. They have to follow the processes and the procedures of Jewish courts. Now, others disagree with this, but the idea that there are different systems of law, and that the concept of Choshen Mishpat and Dinim from a Jewish standpoint is unique. And you see this sometimes in Israel. We mentioned a couple of weeks ago the concept of Mishpat Ivri, that there are people who are now advancing this idea of looking at Halacha and Choshen Mishpat and the Torah as a model for modern-day jurisprudence, and that there are big differences, very big differences, between Israeli law, which much of it is based on old Turkish and British law, with halacha, some mishpat ivri mixed in there, but be'ikaron, it's not a Jewish system, and what we would call choshen mishpat, or mishpat ivri, or the Torah law system, they're not the same. Nafkamina, all right, I'll give you just one parenthetical nafkamina that came up recently of a terrible case, but it came up when we were learning Hilchos. That's also true, yes. It came up when we were learning Baba Kama in the morning in the Kolol, the following case that came up in Israel, Lo Aleinu. In the old days, in the 50s and 60s, they had refrigerators. And even to now, they don't have this because they have a safety feature. But let's say you went into a walk-in fridge and they didn't have one of those push buttons. So that would be a very, very bad situation. So in the 60s, there was somebody in Israel who had a refrigerator, an old fridge. Some people don't part with things easily. So they had an old fridge in their backyard. And unfortunately, two kids in the neighborhood were playing, and they got into the fridge. And that was the end. So the question came to the courts, who's responsible for the death of the children? Are they responsible because they went into the fridge? Or is the Baal refrigerator, is the owner of the refrigerator, liable because he left this dangerous item in his backyard? So actually, in Israeli law, the refrigerator owner was liable. I wonder, what would it be in American law? Would the refrigerator also be liable? However, in halacha, the likelihood is that he would not be liable because you don't belong in my backyard. He would be liable if somebody in his family, God forbid, or somebody who he had allowed into his property had fallen into his swimming pool, or ended up in the pool, or a contractor, or somebody who came to fix it.
Isn't there a concept in the Gemara, like if you have something that's dangerous?
Oh, you have to put a makeh. Yes, yeah. You have to put a makeh. But here's the fascinating nuance: the din of the makeh is not a din in Choshen Mishpat. That's a din in Yoredeya. It's a mitzvah to put up a makeh, but the fulfillment of makeh or the lack of fulfillment of makeh doesn't necessarily translate into liability. Let's say, I'll give you a perfect example, a nafgamina of that. Let's say I promised to pay somebody $1 million. I took a shvuah I would pay them $1 million. Can that person take me to Bezdin to collect $1 million? No. Because in Hilchos Shvuos, I'm responsible, but that's a mitzvah. The mitzvah of the Isser of Lo Yachal Devaro. Don't speak false oaths.
Might be true under regular law also, but there's no consideration.
Right, but the concept is that even though al pidin, I'm chayev to give it to him, I am chayev to pay him because I swore that I would pay him. I'm not chayev al tzchoshem mishpat, I'm chayev because of iser veheter. So it's not a monetary obligation, it's a klapei shmai. It's the same thing for makeh. The chayev to put up a makeh, that's a mitzvah. Lo sasim damim veisecha. If you have something dangerous, you have to guard it appropriately. But that doesn't mean that if somebody falls in it, I'm automatically going to be chayav, because if that person doesn't belong in my house, so why'd they fall in? So that's just a simple example. Yeah.
What about, you know, the mitzvah to put a fence on your roof?
Yes, same thing. That's the mitzvah of makeh. That's the fence. Same thing, exactly. And it's extended to any dangerous things that people could get killed. Ah. So now coming back here, you have all of these dinim of Choshen Mishpat, and specifically when it comes to the world of Nezikin, what maybe we would have intuited as an obligation, we need to now start from scratch as if we knew nothing. Not to say that Svara doesn't play a role, logic does play a role, but we need to try to explore, well, what are the parameters? Meaning, how do we know where Nezikin even comes from? Is it true that if I break your car window, if I slash your tires, I have to pay you?
Why would you even think the opposite?
So that's a great question. Why would I think the opposite? But if you come from the standpoint that we have to create a framework of obligation, maybe I'm going to go to Gehenim for doing that, but who says that I have to take out my checkbook and pay you? Or even if I do have to pay you, who says how much I have to pay you? If I steal something from you, how much do I pay? And then the opposite case, there's something called grama b'nizakin. If I cause you damage indirectly, let's say there's it's not direct. Let's say there's a dangerous animal that's in a cage, and I lift up the top of the cage, and the animal runs out, and he ends up in your property, and he destroys. I'm 34 years old. Old enough.
You don't know better, right?
It doesn't matter. I'm a shtickmacher, so I open up this cage, and then the animal comes out and damages your property. So technically, I'm not liable. That's called grama. That's indirect causality. So all of these halachas need to be worked out, and then the question becomes even more complicated. Let's say I have an animal. I have a dog, and the dog comes and chews up your lawn. So now you're going to say, am I liable for that? Maybe you should say, I didn't do anything. My property damage. Who says that property damage is actually chayav? So the Torah says that, but we're going to have to figure out what those parameters are. And then even more nuance is, well, did I do anything wrong? From a moral standpoint, I probably did by causing that infraction. But did I violate an issur in the Torah? Where does it say in the Torah that I should not damage you? It says in the Torah that I shouldn't hit you. Lo Yosef pen Yosef, I can't beat you. But where does it say in the Torah that I can't slash your tires? There's no pasuk that says do not damage. Similarly, there's actually no explicit pasuk that says I can't let my property run wild. Oh, perfect. So there is the Yad Ramas, your Mechavin to Rav Meir Halevi Avulafia from the classic commentary on Baba Kama, excuse me, on Baba Basra. He has also on Sanhedrin. So he's living in Spain in the early period of the Rishonim. So he says along those lines, V'hafta l'reacha kamocha. Others say maybe it's from the Rishash, I think, in the beginning of Ksubas. He says it's a kal v'chomer from Hashavas Aveda. If I see your wallet on the street, I have to give it back to you. Of course, I can't let my dog eat your wallet. But then there's a very interesting, on page one, there's Rabbeinu Yonah. Rabbeinu Yonah is the author of many important works. He was a cousin of the Ramban. So Rabbeinu Yonah is living in Girona, which is northern cusp edge of Spain, just the south of France. And he writes a very well-known ethical treatise called Shari Tshuva. He authored a commentary on Pirkei Avos, and in the beginning of his commentary on Pirkei Avos, he writes something fascinating. Moshe kibel Torah miSinai, bein Torah shebichsav, bein Torah shebalpeh. There are two tracks of Torah, and this is very important to understand. You have the written Torah, and then you have the oral tradition. The written Torah cannot be interpreted or understood in any way, shape, or form according to traditional Judaism without a parallel. Even the narratives don't make sense without the Chazal filling in the gaps. So what does he say? She'im lo kein e'ef shalamei daba, you cannot understand it. Shehare kasuv, as it says, lo sigzol, do not steal. V'chol nizakin b'chlal oso halav. What is Rabbeinu Yonah's opinion? That the prohibition against stealing actually includes all of the prohibition, all of the concepts of nezikin, of damages. Which has, by the way, a very important, it could have potential significant nafgaminas. A person who is a thief, for example, cannot testify in court. So perhaps according to Rabbi Yonah, if my property damages, let's say I have a kitchen, or better yet, a barbecue in my backyard. I'm making a barbecue, and the barbecue, everything is going fine, and all of a sudden I wasn't paying attention, and the barbecue gets out of control and it burns down my neighbor's garage. So according to Rabbeinu Yonah, perhaps that carelessness makes me into a rasha of a gazla. Now, I didn't have hasra, I didn't have warning, it wasn't deliberate, but the concept, according to Rabbeinu Yonah, is that the lav of lo sigzol in that umbrella includes all types of damages.
If somebody steals inadvertently and don't have the intent, they could still be
disqualified. No, because that was bishogig. But the idea that, again, like I said, in this case...
Same thing if you damage inadvertently.
That's what I said. I mentioned that. I said, in this case, I wouldn't be a Russia because I would be a Russia, but it would be bishoking. But the concept that maybe, let's say deliberately, or poshea, whatever, there are a lot of different permutations, but the concept that according to Rabbi Yonah, I am violating the concept of theft is a very interesting one. In a certain sense, maybe you could say, and some Achronim discuss like this, every case of theft involves damage. Because I took away your property, it's like I damaged it. And maybe, in a certain sense, according to Rabbeinu Yonah, every case of damage involves a measure of theft. Because I've stolen that, you know, you used to have this very nice mug. If I came and stepped on it, so now I've stolen, in a certain sense, I've stolen the usage of that mug from you. And now I have to compensate you. I have to, there are different ways of saying whether I have to replace your mug or I have to bring the mug back to its original condition. That's a further discussion. But this is issue number one. And then issue number two, which kind of flows from the whole discussion that we had right now, is a fascinating Tosas on Kiddushin, Daf Yud Gimel Amud Beis, on page two. Tosas discusses what's called Milve HaKesuva Batora. Milve, what is a milve? Anybody know what the word milve? It comes from the word halva'a, borrow. HaKesuva Batora, that is written in the Torah. So Tosfos says, the Gemara has the following distinction. There are certain obligations, they are intuitive. And this is what we're kind of alluding to. And Tosfos is putting it right out there. There are certain things that are intuitive. Imagine David lent me $10. So if you gave me the $10, so does the Torah need to obligate me to pay you back the $10? Or is it understood, it's easily understood logically, that if you lent it to me on the condition, obviously, that I'm getting, it's not a matana, it's a halva, so that's a milve, she'ena ksuva batorah. The Torah didn't need to script the fact that I have to pay you back the loan that you gave me. It's understood. You only gave it to me on the condition that I'm going to give it back to you. Well, what about, let's say, pidyon haben? Had the Torah not required me, or someone else, me, I'm a Kohen, so it doesn't work for me, but I could be on the receiving end. Had the Torah not required somebody else to give me 96 or 100 grams of silver, would they have woken up one day and said, oh, I just had a firstborn child, I'm going to find the local Kohen and give them 100 grams of silver? Would they have thought to do that? No. So that's a milva haksuva batorah. Had the Torah not said it, so where would you put an Ezekin?
More than common sense.
That's what I would have said. But look what Tosfos says. Pirish, what is it? Karbonos, upidyon haben, ve'erachin, ve'nezikin. He puts nezikin in the category of milve haksuva b'torah, that the Torah had to write it like karbonos and pidyon haben, and erachin, like the value of promising to the Beis HaMikdash. Shelo hayu yodin iyani nesinos halalu, imlo shenischaiva hatover b'feirish. Had the Torah not said it, we wouldn't have known it. Now, it's not clear from this Tosas if we wouldn't have known at all that you have to pay, or that how you have to pay, how much you have to pay, what are the conditions, and what. But the idea that you learn from this whole story, I think, is that the baseline is that there is no obligation to pay just because somebody else suffers a loss because of you. The Torah has to come and create models through which we're going to create obligations. We're going to create a chiyuv. This is the background for the nature of chiyuvei mazik.
Which then makes it very interesting that it's not actually there.
Oh, so that, and this is Rabbi Rosenzweig's point. Rabbi Rosenzweig's point was part of the whole nature of the relationship between Torah Shebaal Peh and Torah Shebichsav in Nezikin is so important. If you open a Chumash, will you find, like, if you damage, you have to pay? No. You'll find, like, some very obscure verses that say, if, you know,
if your fire,
it's not even, Ubier b'steacha, the word bier, nobody even, the Gemara has the struggles to understand what the word bier means. It ate, it consumed, is the talk, like what is it referring to? It's very ambiguous, the Parshas Mishpatim. And then you could even expand this, why it is that Parshas Mishpatim comes right after Maamar Har Sinai. You would have thought that after Maamar Har Sinai, we're going to get all the religious things. The answer is, to Rabbi Rosenzweig's, one of the components of the many things he talked about when he spoke to the Kollel, was this idea that, yeah, had it not been for the Torah, or the Torah's way of, and the rabbinic system of law, we wouldn't have had it. And even if you just had the Torah Shebichsav, if you just opened the Chumash and Parshas Mishpatim, you would not know the laws of Nezikin. You wouldn't know it. It's not clearly there.
So
I don't know. I don't know what they had. That's a good question. The Karaites, who didn't believe in the oral tradition. So now this all brings us to the first Mishnah in Maseches Bava Kamma. Because now we're thinking, okay, so I have salt and I have... So here is the first Mishnah in Bava Kamma. The Mishnah tells us, Arba'a Avos Nezikin. There are four main categories of damages. And Rashi says the reason why they're called Avos is because they are written in the Torah. They are found in the text of the Torah Shebichsav. Now, they're not found directly necessarily. They might be a little bit oblique, but there are four categories that you can identify in the Torah. What are they? Hashor, the ox, Habor, Vahabor, and the pit, Vahamave. I don't even know what the word mave means. Comes from the word Shoresh Beis Ayin Hey. Bua. I don't know what that means. It's a strange word. Vahahever. Lahavir with an ayin is to burn. So the Gemara has two opinions. What does mave mean? Does it mean bayun, like to request? Boi, to need, to ask, to pray, to request, to daven, which would refer to a person. So that's Rab's understanding, that Adam Hamazik, a person who damages, is also one of these four categories. And then the second option, Shmuel says, no, it's Levair means to consume. So that would be the animal consuming with its teeth. That's called shame, Zigzant. So these are going to be, now the Gemara has many other categories of Avos Nezikin that are not included here, and they break them down in different ways. But these are the four main categories of Nezikin, which, based on what we're saying now, it's very possible that if you don't fit into one of these categories of Nezikin, you will not be subject to, you know, liability from a monetary standpoint. You might be wrong. You might, what's that? Yeah, by based.
You could be morally obligated.
Exactly. Right.
These derive.
Yes, these are all derived from Torah Shebichsav, and the Gemara goes on to figure out one pasuk for each one. Yes?
So these are only the Oraisa applicate, but there must be the Rabbanan ones too, right? I
mean, there are, but that goes more along, that would be, I would say, additionally. In principle, these are the only obligations. I'm speaking in principle. Mid Rabbanan, sometimes the Rabbanan will be Mechayiv you. But here's the difference. The reason why, let's say in this area of halacha, the rabbanans are different than other areas. Like, you know, the rabbis will tell you, we assume in the Chumash that our psak, there is one opinion in the Gemara that from a biblical standpoint, making a, you know, you go to Burger King and ask for a chicken cheese sandwich. From a Torah standpoint, from a biblical standpoint, that's okay. But the rabbis came along and they said not to do that, right? In this area of halacha, the rabbis don't act the same way, and I'll tell you why. Because if there is a problem, a monetary tension between, let's say, Barry and me, well, what are the rabbis going to do? They're going to say, well, the kula would be minat Torah, the chumra will be midrabanan. Well, what's a kula for you is a chumra for me. And what's a kula for me is a chumra for you. And therefore, the rabbanan, you can't just, when it comes to dini mamonos, you can't just say, oh, we're going to be machmir. Oh, the Torah says that you're not chayav, but the Rabbanan will say you are chayav. That doesn't work, because then the Rabbanan are now, you know, you have to, So what you'll find more often than not is this idea that Larry alluded to, that sometimes there's what's called latzis yedei shamayim, to fulfill your moral obligation. So that's a good example in the case of Grama ben Ezekin. If I cause you damage indirectly, so maybe there's a possibility that I should, from a moral standpoint, from an ethical standpoint, I should pay you. If I let the dog loose and he ran in and destroyed your backyard, so maybe me klapei shmaya, I should pay you, but you can't take me to Beis Din. So, you know, after 120, the Rebbe Shlomo might say to me, what kind of a person are you? You didn't bring godliness into the world, you brought rishus into the world. But these are the four main categories. And what's more interesting is that the Gemara has certain permutations and parameters that each one of these is subject to. And they're not necessarily logical because they're learned from a pasuk. So one, I'll give you one example. One din that comes up in the context of Eish, for example. Eish, which is, we assumed, is Mav, Hever. Hever is Eish. So what's the case of Eish? Eish is, I'm making the barbecue in my backyard and I'm not being careful, and the fire spreads beyond my property and burns somebody else's property down. Okay. So let's say it burns down the next guy's haystack, and inside the haystack is an iPad. So there is a special Xeris HaKasuv that says that I'm not liable to pay for the iPad inside the haystack. Because it's called Tamun.
What?
Tamun, hidden. Tamun. Hidden. And it's not just a question of whether it's normal or not normal. It's the fact that it's hidden, which is not something we're going to talk about at length right now. But it says, wait a second, that's not a logical halacha. It's just that's learned from a pasuk, etc. Yeah.
What if the owner of the haystack is just about to search the haystack for the iPad? He knows it's in there.
Everyone knows it's in there. It doesn't matter. It's not that you don't know it.
So the same thing would be true if instead of being a haystack, it was my briefcase and the iPad was in the briefcase.
Potentially. Unless you consider the briefcase a holder for the iPad. That would be a different way, potentially is a different way of looking at it. It might not be Tom, it might be Tuffle to the iPad. I don't know. That's a good question. What's that? Yes. So that's why I was thinking when this whole thing, let's say I had something in the glove compartment. So here's a perfect example of where we need to start thinking. Wait a second. The salt did the damage. Well, in what category do we fit the salt? Is the salt like my animal that went out and damaged? Is it like my pit that damaged? Is it like my fire? Is it like a person? Is it? And depending on how you're going to categorize, you're going to have these different permutations. Another example is, sure, if I have an animal that steps on something. So the din is that shor is only liable in rishus hayachid, in somebody else's property, because it says ubir b'stei acher. So if let's say I have a monster truck in my backyard, my monster truck, you know, those little things, if it comes into your backyard and crushes your toy, so then I'll be chayav, potentially, like shor. If you assume, just using the analogy for the moment, that the monster truck, the little monster truck, is like a shor. But if it goes into Rishus HaRabim and crushes somebody's toys there, I'm not chayav. Again, not learned from a logical viewpoint.
Really,
it's just
the difference between the fact that I control.
Yes, so awesome. Exactly. So in a case
where it goes, where it goes.
Exactly. So that for sure would be different. That probably would be Adam HaMazik. Because here's Rav Shechter made this point. When he gave a chabur once, way back at the beginning of the year, if I take a fire and I light your house on fire, that's not Eish. The case of Eish was where I made a barbecue, which was okay, and then it got out of control. If I actually throw a Molotov cocktail at your house, that's Adam HaMazik. That's direct. That's arson. So the same thing here. It's very possible.
The issue is intent. You know, if you're making a barbecue, you don't intend.
It's more than that, because in the halacha, it's a question of direct. In the case of the barbecue, when I lit the fire, it wasn't on your property.
So if I was trying to burn something on my property, and I decide to do it by throwing a Molotov cocktail
in your property.
But I throw it a little too hard, and it goes to your property.
So then that would be...
Is that like the barbecue, or is that like
no,
the match?
No, that would be like the Adam HaMazik, but it would be Adam HaMazik B'shogeg. But the difference is, Adam HaMazik B'shogeg is still chayav. Because one of the rules is that this is the difference. Adam is chayav, bein b'shogeg, bein b'mezid, bein b'onas, bein b'ratzon. I'm chayav if I damage while I'm sleeping. If I go to sleep and there's a cup next to me, and in my sleep I flail and smash the cup, so I'm chayiv to pay for it, even though I was sleeping. Adam is always chayiv. It happens, let's say I went to sleep and somebody put their china bowl next to me, then I'm not chayiv. That's called onus. Or that's called the second guy was poshea. All right, this is a lot of, we could spend like in the kolol, 3 hours a day for, you know, a whole year talking about these topics. We've only gotten through five lot. But now we're starting to notice that each of these categories is unique, and we have to figure out in every circumstance, where is it going to fit in? And so what are going to be the local rules of that particular thing? Okay, so here is the Mishnah that is pertinent. It's actually, the Mishnah actually appears in Bava Metzia. Bava Metzia, Daf Kuf Yud Zayin Amud Beis, down at the bottom of page 4. Hakosel v'ha'ilon, the wall and the tree. Shenaflu l'rishis harabim, that fell into the public square. V'hiziku, and they damaged. Pater mila shali, you are not obligated to pay. Nasnu's lo zman lokutz etsa ilon. They gave him a certain time period by which they had to cut down the tree, or listor velistor etsa kosel, or to take down the wall. Why would they do that? Why would they tell you have to take it down? Exactly. It's dangerous. Good, exactly. So now you're starting to see how it's going to have to play out. So, right, it's Rishus HaRabim. It's in this regard, it will be also true in Rishus HaYachid, but that point is going to be important depending on what category it's going to be. If it's going to be Eish, it's going to be Chayiv in somebody else's property, or in Rishus HaRabim. If it's going to be board, you know, each one. So, oh, that is exactly the next case in the Mishnah. Perfect. The next case in the Mishnah was Nasnu's Lozman Lakutz. They told him, cut it down. Velistor Esakosel, and take down the wall. Venaflu Bisohazman. If it fell down in the storm before the time they told him, let's say they told him, cut it down by March 1st, and it fell down on February 1st, so then you are Potter. You're not liable because I it wasn't the time yet. But la'acharzman, after that time, chayav, you are liable. Well, how long is the time? So if you look on the next page, on page 5, so the baseline, it's actually, I would say it's about 37% of the way down the page, where it says, the first word on the line is mode, there are two sets of double dots. Nasnu lozman, vekama zman. The first word on the line is now vekama. Vekama zman bezdin. How long is the bezdin? We'll come back to this word bezdin in a second. Rabbi Yochanan said, shloshim yom. 30 days. So generally speaking, they give you 30 days to address your wall. Now, before we go on, I want to ask you a question. What's the case here? How do you understand this mission? When is the damage happening? All the mission said was a kosel and an ilon shenaflu that fell down. When did the damage happen?
Probably when it fell.
What do you mean when it fell?
It hit something.
It hit something when?
As it fell.
As it fell? What did you say?
After the time.
Okay. Before the time of five, while it was falling. Another way of reading this Mishnah might be, it fell down.
Something happened. Some animals came out or something.
Or, I walked by and tripped over it. Exactly. Two different ways of learning it. And there may be a big distinction between those two cases. And there also would be a difference between when the Bezdin warned me what the time period is. In the first case, right, they're warning me. They're saying, look, your wall is dangerous. Your tree is dangerous. So the first thing I have to worry about is getting the thing down. Then in the second case where it damaged somebody after it fell down, well, then I have to worry not just about, I have to clean it up. how long do I have for cleaning it up? So Tosfos here raises the question, well, 30 days, maybe that's for certain kinds of things. But if you have Bishok Kala Yachal Osir, let's say I have a cleanup job that's a quick cleanup job, meaning I have the same thing. Let's say somebody was in an accident, you know, on Dempster, and there's glass all over the floor. Do we say you have 30 days to clean up the glass? No, you sweep. You have to sweep it up right away. So
30 minutes.
Right, 30, whatever it is. And similarly, if you look on page 6, getting back to the way that David understood the case and some others, 30 days is just going to be the standard time period. Let's say and you notice it was based, and we're going to come back to this in a minute, they come to me and they say, oh my gosh, look at this wall. This wall, it's imminent. So says, this is called Shita Mukubetzes, which is a 16th century, 17th century work by Rav Bezalel Ashkenazi, who summarized earlier rabbinic sources from the Rishonim. So he quotes here Rabbeinu Yonason, in the underlined here on page 6, Avo bedavar shel sakana, if it's really dangerous, kagon kosel hagavoa harbe, a very tall wall, sheyesh la'amod oso, that you can assess it, beumdana, with an assessment sheyipol l'chamisha asar yom. It's going to fall in how long? 15 days. O pachos, or less, o yoser, or more. Yecholin litein lo zman muat, velister oso miyad, kafi azman sheyitnu lo. They can assess it and give you that different assessment. Now this became a discussion. Rabbi Yosef Berman and Rabbi Eric Goldman, the last couple of days in the Kolo, were discussing a ritva that was related to this. I saw in the Shittim Kubetzes. So now we're saying the time frame is not just 30 days. 30 days is a default time. They don't have a specific concern. But if they do, they can tell you, like you said, the assumption is you need X number of time. If it's imminent, they tell you it's got to be down tomorrow. Obviously, they can't tell you it has to be down now. You don't have a chainsaw. You don't have a company. You have to hire somebody. And similarly, in like Tosfos said, so we now have two different possibilities of how to read this Mishnah. Either it damaged while it was falling or after it fell. And in both cases, you have to think about how much time it's going to take. What is the appropriate time frame? In the case of the falling, they're going to give you an assessment, or it'll be just 30 days. In the case where it fell, like Tosfos said, and also it's depending on how big of a deal it is. I don't know if anybody here remembers. I don't know if maybe it was still when we were living in New Jersey. Most people here have been to Manhattan, right? It's an island. You've seen this, right? You remember it's an island? So there's water all around. So to get to that island from New Jersey, there is a bridge called the George Washington Bridge. So if you go over the George Washington Bridge, you look, like if you look down the right side, you see the west side. If you look on the left side, up toward Riverdale in the Bronx, there's kind of like a very steep slope of a cliff there. And a couple of years ago, a huge chunk of that cliff collapsed down. And I don't remember if it fell on the Metro North tracks on a train, maybe, or it fell on the Henry Hudson Parkway. It was like a very big deal. People got hurt. How long did it take them to clean that up? It took them months. They had to build some. What's that?
Months?
Of course. It was like half. It was a precarious situation. They had to put up scaffolding, and they have to. So it takes a long time. So in that case, the nezikin, the harchakas nezikin, it'll take you a few months. But like I said before, if you got an accident on Dempster, you're mechuyev to remove it immediately. So now we start thinking, okay. So first question is going to be, in our case with the salt, which way did it damage? Did it damage after it fell or while it was falling? So in the case of the salt, it damaged while it was falling. So how do you view that? Is it like bor, or is it like esh? What's that? Oh, so that's how the Gemara is going to address it. The Gemara has, in the beginning of Bava Kamma, the Gemara says, well, the Mishnah later on, which we don't have time to do, says, well, there are certain things where you can find commonalities between the two. Let's say it's not exactly one and it's not the other, but it has enough in common. So the Gemara says, oh, we can learn that out also. So one of the examples the Gemara gives about what's called a bor hamiskalgel. Let's say you have a bor, which is either I dig a pit, or a bor could also be I leave a backpack or a knapsack in the street, and you trip over the knapsack. So that's also a bore. It's not a dug bore. It's an obstacle. Makes sense, right? So generally speaking, a bore is where I dig a pit. And then the Gemara says we extend it to if I put a knapsack. What if I put a knapsack there and then somebody kicks it down? So I put the knapsack in the middle of Dempster. So if somebody got hurt on Dempster, I'd be chayav. And then some car comes along and kicks the thing, and now it's lying in McCormick. Am I still obligated? Well, on the one hand, it's my item, and it's going to do damage. On the other hand, it's no longer on Dempster. It's now McCormick. Maybe I could say I'm putter. So the Gemara says, no, you are chayav. It's still, and even though it's not the same thing as bor, because it's not where you put it, but you can combine bor with shore, with all, the Gemara has the ways of combining it, so you can learn now from between. So here, let's think about it. When it's falling down, on the one hand, it's similar to my knapsack that did damage. On the other hand, it damaged while it was falling. So maybe we said, what might that be similar to? That might be similar to Aish, where I had the damage there was no damage. It was a barbecue. And then the damage went, and it damaged while it was going. And actually, the wind helped the damage. So Tosfos is not sure about this. Tosfos, which is on page 7, Tosfos thinks that there are different ways of looking at it. Va'afal pi, on page 7, Tosfos in the beginning of Baba Kama, va'afal pi, afal gav, to bishas nefila at the time of falling, yesh l'damoso le'esh, kamo labor. It could be both, or it could be either. Tosfos thinks, it in a certain sense, it's similar to esh, in a certain sense, it's similar to bor. Nonetheless, Tosfos says, he prefers, the Gemara assumes that it's more similar to bor. If it's bor, usually a bor is stationary, so you could say it's a kol shekein. If I'm obligated, if somebody trips over my bore, certainly if I drop my bore on somebody else's car, my pit, again, pit meaning this dangerous item, so I'm also going to be liable. So Tosfos concludes that you could have compared it to Aish, but we're going to compare it to bore, and this becomes a big discussion, Bishon, we don't have time for this morning. So now, here I have my wall, my Morton salt, and it's going to fall down, and it hits the cars while it's going. So it's for sure going to be bor. Maybe it's also going to be aish. Maybe it's learned from the two of them, but it's going to be bor. But here's the problem. The din is that a bor has to be what's called tchilas asiyaso lenezek. It has to be initially established as an item, which is a damager. Meaning, I have a backpack or a knapsack in my closet. Is that a bor? It's not a bor. But what happens is, when I put it in a place where it could hurt somebody, now it's a bore. I have a Cutco knife in my kitchen. Is that a bore? It's not a bore. It's in the drawer. It's and it has a little lock. The kids can't get to it, let's say. But if I put a Cutco knife in the middle of a pedestrian walkway, that's a bore. So that's tchilas asiyaso lenezek. So here's my question. Wait a second. You want to tell me that my Morton salt and my wall, that's a bore because it hit, but where's the tchilas asiyaso lenezek? Oh, so that might be one. We'll get to that preach in a second. But it also plays into the second issue, which we mentioned, which is, look on page 8, which the Rambam, Rashi, they all say, the Rambam quotes this in Hilchos Nizkei Mamon, in Perek Yud Gimel Halacha Yud Tes. He quotes the story with the tree and the wall that fell down. Third line, v'im hayu ru'uin, in the underline, if they were weak, based in Koven Lozman. The based in, the rabbinical court, they have to give me the time.
What, to fix it?
Yes. The question is why? Why does it have to be the based in? What about, why couldn't my neighbor just come over to me? According to this Rambam, let's say I have a wall and I have a neighbor. I happen to have a neighbor. The Campbells are our neighbors to the south. They're extremely handy people. Well, we're surrounded by handy people. We have Oren Laxer on one side. He's good if, God forbid, somebody needs to have medical attention. You have Oscar Stewart, who's an electrician, also extremely handy, across the street. He's also an ex-Marine, also a good thing to have in your block. And on the other side, you have the Campbells. We're surrounded by, Baruch Hashem, three from people, and the Campbells also very handy. They're always doing home improvement projects. They're doing great things. So let's say the Campbells come to me and they say, you know, that thing is a damage. And they say, it needs to be fixed in 2 weeks. we know because they were handy, and they know that I'm not handy, so they're trying to help me out here. Am I chayv if it falls after 2 weeks? Rama says, I'm not chayv. Only if the Beis Din knocked on my door and they said, that thing needs to get fixed. Now, by the way, now we can understand why in a Jewish society, and it's parallel here, you're going to have a Beis Din, and the Beis Din is going to have employees that are people who know about roads, who know about economics. They have to be able, you have to have a sewer division of the Beis Din. Right? You're going to have a residential, whatever you call it. I don't know what the village calls that stuff. The building department. They're going to have a building department. So they're going to come around just what for safety measures. The Beis Din is going to have some supervisors to come check to make sure. Because otherwise, I could always say, you know, I built it. Oh. So this is going to be very important because Aruch HaShulchan explains on page 9, and we're running out of time, so we won't see it inside. Essentially, what he means to say, Rabbi Golden developed this idea, says the Aruch HaShulchan in the underline, Kivan she'in tchilas asiyasa lenezek potter below hasra mi beis din. When am I chayav on my knife? Not when it's in my kitchen, when it's in the street. Why? Because now it's considered to be created a damage. My wall. Is my wall a damager? It's a wall. The Beis Din, when they paskin, it's dangerous. Now I don't have a wall. You know what I have? I have a danger. I have a bar. I have something that's tchilas asiyasa lenezek. And that's why the Beis Din has to come. Because if my neighbor comes, who says that transforms it into a damager? The Beis Din, by their declaration saying, you must take it down, says it's not a wall anymore. Now it's a damager.
Oh,
awesome. So two things. I would say, number one, maybe, now I'm speaking broadly, maybe in a state where you have a Jewish state and the community, the same way, and this is by analogy, the same way that there's a discussion, Achronim, does the Jewish state have the status of a melech? Melech has certain privileges. So certain, there is a bit of discussion about that. The Netziv has an idea like this in the beginning of the Hamikdavar and Parsha Shoftim, that's perhaps the melech has certain authority that could be paralleled in a constitutional government that's represented by the people. You know, like in the what we have in America is a constitutional democracy, but it's a democracy that's based on representation. The same thing in Israel. So it could be that if the whole community comes together and designates certain people as the community representatives, maybe that has the tokef of a quasi Beis Din, or maybe the Beis Din. There is a big difference. Beis Din doesn't have, well, they have, but not in the same way. Let's say eminent domain privileges. You know, the Beis Din. So it's tricky. It's tricky because qua a melech, the melech does not have this. And that's why I use it just as an analogy. A melech does not have the authority unless he is the dayan. Wearing the crown doesn't necessarily give him the right to adjudicate matters. It happens to be that traditionally, let's say Shlomo HaMelech was the chief judge. David HaMelech was the chief judge. That was also a big part of their function. But strictly speaking, it's a legal decision, not so much a governmental decision. But there's some overlap here. But even in the case of eminent domain, the Beis Din, they can make something hefker if they decide, but the government has the right to come and take your property, theoretically. You know, they could come and say, the melech could come and say, we're building a highway, whether you like it or not, and we're going to use this stretch of land. That's the nature of the melech. So now here comes the question. So let's say you have a building, so you say to yourself, if I built this wall and it was sturdy, I don't have to worry about it, unless the Beis Din comes along. Well, is that true? So here in the...
Even if it wasn't sturdy, it sounds like even if it wasn't sturdy,
oh,
I
so,
don't have to worry about it unless the Beis Din comes along.
Great. So let's say it wasn't sturdy in the first place. And now, is that okay? So take a look here. Perfect. Perfect segue to the Prisha. Oh, it's going to be...
What if it's an
A? Well, but maybe even if it's a bore. Take a look. Who asked this question? On the tour is the first... Four component sections, like the precursor to the Shulchan Aruch of Yaakov ben Asher, the Rosh's son. So there's a commentary on the tour from the Prisha. I think his name is Rav Yeshua Falk from the 1600s in Germany. So he has the following case where he says sometimes, he quotes from Bechuvas HaRosh, that sometimes if my neighbors tell me I have to take it down, I will be chayv. So he gives you two examples. Number one, he says, Yesh Lomar, you know when you don't need a Beis Din? You see on the bottom where I put the arrow? Haya Nikar Vidgoloi V'yadua Kilkulam. It was self-evident. It was obvious. The only time you need a Beis Din, you need the village, so to speak, using, Paul, just using the governmental analogy of the village just for a second. You know when you need the buildings department of the Beis Din come and tell you? When it looks okay, but they come and knock on your door and say, we were doing a check in the area and we see there's some weakness in the building. But if you have a tree that's dead and leaning over like this, you don't need the Beis Din. It's apparent. All you need are the Campbells to knock on my door and say, you know, wake up and smell the coffee. Similarly, some achronim say that's also true if the building was bad to begin with. If it was a kosel ra'u in the first place. Because then it never had the din of a wall. It had the din of a bore. It was a damage waiting to happen. Similarly, second teretz. Oh, inami, shiny hasam. It's different there. Dinosan biyadayim hachitim al hakosel ra'ua. He put a stack of wheat on a weak wall. He filled the storage house, and that mechshev nami poshea. That is more of a poshea. You should have been more careful when you filled your storage house. The case over there was the guy filled the storage house with wheat, and the wheat was so full that it caused the thing to fall down. So now it's the salt. So now we're going to have to make an assessment. In the case of the salt, you have to get a professional assessor to figure out, did they put in too much salt? Because now, if they put in too much salt, they're going to be chayv. They're going to be called a poshea. And you don't need the Beis Din come along and tell you, oh, you should see that the wall is... They should have known, because you shouldn't have filled it so much. No, not necessarily. Not necessarily. It could be, and this is exactly what's happening here, that if I have a wall, the nature of walls is that they're going to weaken over time. But just because it's going to weaken doesn't mean it's going to shift from being a wall to being a bore. Exactly. So in this case, the fact that the wall fell down alone, if the Bezin, if the local village, they had the building permits, so then there's no reason they should suspect it's going to become a bore. Now the questions have become the opposite. Did they put in too much salt that would have transformed it by their action of pshia, of negligence, into a bore? That's a stating a damage. So just to summarize, the Shulchan Aruch rules, in page 10, this is where we'll conclude, HaKosel v'ha'ilon shenaflu l'rishus harabim, simin tof tez zayin choshem mishpat, a wall or a tree that fell into the public property. And in this case, it's also going to be true into somebody else's property, rishus hayachid. V'hiziku, and they damaged. Pater milashalim. You're not liable. Afal pishif kiram. Even if you made them hefker, lefisha enam domen labor, because they're not similar to a bor. It's a wall. It's not a bor. Why? Shahare ein tchilasan lehezekan. When they were built originally, it wasn't a dangerous item. It wasn't intended for damage. Now the Ramah adds in the parentheses, v'yeshomrim some say, if after they fell and then you didn't clean it up, then you're going to be chay, but that's afterwards because you should have gotten the glass out of the street. Let's say it was a weak wall. The Beis Din will tell you how much time you have. Says the Ramah in the Rashi script where the little Beis is. That means they had to warn you. Without Beis Din, even though his friends told him, Eino klum. It's nothing. However, let's say you dug in the wall, and what did you do by digging in it? You weakened it, exactly. Vigaram lahapilo, and you caused it? Chayav benizakin, you are obligated to pay. Dehavalei chitzav mamish, it's like you caused it to happen. And therefore, you are responsible. 30 days. And then the Ramah adds in the parentheses, if it's urgent, so then you got to take it down immediately. And then the Shulchan Aruch concludes, in the bracket, in the bold print, naflu besochas man, if it fell early, putter. Why? Because the basin told me I had 6 weeks to get rid of it. What could I have done? It's not my fault. Im la'achar zman chayav, afterwards it's chayav, mipnei, shehisha also, you should have waited. You shouldn't have waited. What, the basin told you to take it down, afterwards you're going to be chayav. Final two lines in the Rashi script, v'chol zeh, this is all true, kepshed b'na'a mitchilaso karoi, when you originally built it properly. Avalam lo b'na'a karoi, if you didn't prep it properly, u'machamaz zeh nafal akol, so because of that, chayav b'nizka. He quotes that from the Magid Mishnah on that Rambam. If you didn't do it properly the first time, so then you're liable because you don't have the heter to say, oh, it's an onus, I didn't know. Well, you should have built it properly the first time. And because you built it properly the first time, then you can say, I don't have to worry about it. So all of these things go into, we started off just kind of laying the foundation, no pun intended, of thinking about the framework for Nizakin and how Nizakin is unique in Choshen Mishpat and how you have to find the different categories. And then once you identify the different categories, let's say Tosa says it could be Eish, but it's certainly going to be Bor. Well, even if it's Bor, you're going to have to figure out how to play it out. And that's why in this case, I thought it was really very interesting to think about, you would have to assess, did they have a permit for this building? Had the building been inspected? If the building had been inspected, then you say it's a Kosel, it's not a Bor. But then you have to ask the question, well, should they have known when they filled it with salt, how much salt did they fill it with? How long has it been up? If they had this amount of salt for the last 25 years, so then you can safely say that that's the building. Right. So then you have to ask the question, does a reasonable person, this goes back to Rabbi Levin's Zichron Levracha's reasonable man test, at what point do you have to say, well, now I have to start decreasing the amount of salt based on the age of the building? But that's an interesting question that they're going to have to figure out. Exactly. And
this doesn't...
Right, because that the Prisha was quoting that from another area of Shulchan Aruch, and I think it's in Simon Shin Zion, where it was patently obvious that it was dangerous, and then... Exactly. They had a case like this recently on the Alolein, on the south side. I heard on the news they had a building collapse on the south side. These things happen sometimes. And... there was the same question, how quick can they remove it? So they have to remove it immediately. It's mazik, all these kind of things. Yes?
Does the car dealer have any responsibility parking the cars next to potentially
a hazardous situation? Great question. So then that becomes a question of what we said before, what we said at the beginning, toward the beginning of the case of my refrigerator and worrying about other people. So if you have... if you have two properties that are adjacent to each other, there is a concept called harchakas nezikin, that if I have something that's a potential damage, I have to move it away from you. So then the question becomes in the reverse. Is there any reason, the Gemara has a din about this, is there al hanizak laharchakas asmo? Does he ever have any responsibility? Simply saying you should have said no. He doesn't have any. It's my property. I can do whatever I want. But then the question is, if he knows, so then is there some implicit mechila? It's a good question, whether or not. The simple answer is, generally, we assume alamazik laharcha kasatzmo. The damager has to, it's my property. I could do whatever I want. But in Acharami, if you knew, so then maybe you would be considered mechila. That's it. Final look at this.
If the word salt is not accurate to its customers, its cars, they were not all accurate as cars.
No, they weren't.
Customers.
Oh, really? Oh, no. Yes. Because maybe they were poshea. For putting it next to a salt dealership.
But maybe they had no way of knowing how
exactly.
Much salt was being filed into that building. I would have been there for 25 years.
Yeah, I would think it's not a Shia. Well, it's not a Shia, right? It's
but,
not negligence.
But they're holding those cars, right, as getting paid to fix those cars.
Oh, so then they're like a Shomer Sachar, are you saying? So it's in Shomer, but it's an Onus. So that's a question. Which kind of Shomer are they? Are they Chai for Onsen? Is it, so there's four different kinds of showmen. So it's fascinating. It's great. It's awesome.
Great shiur.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Koch. All right. You too.
Is it?
You're still recording, right? Hakara is...